This is the local music revolution.
Hello and welcome to the Local Music Revolution. I will be your host, Ogre. How are you fine people doing this evening? On today's episode, I have an acoustic songwriter from Las Vegas, Nevada, coming in and calling in and doing an interview with me. So that's awesome. When I originally looked up Chasing Absalom, I thought it was a death metal band. I don't know about anybody else, but just on sight alone, it sounds and feels like something a death metal band would be called and sound cool. So I was very surprised when I found out that Raymond, the solo acoustic writer that I will be talking to in a few minutes, was an acoustic songwriter. It was just very funny to me that I just went straight to a death metal place instead of an acoustic place. And there was no real jump to actually lead me to that conclusion. So I thought that was kind of funny. I do have to say this. I bought an acoustic guitar way back when I started building my studio. I really enjoy playing my acoustic guitar because it's just raw. You don't have to worry about turning on an amp and setting a tone. You tune the strings and you go. And I really like that fact. Plus, I learned how to play drums on acoustic drums. That will always be my favorite form of that medium, is just the acoustic drums is bashing the hell out of them. I would give anything to play my acoustic drums at this point, but my living situation does not allow it, so I have to stick with the electric drums that are just sterile and just don't feel right. So, I have a homework assignment for everybody listening. Is there anything hindering you from performing your instrument or your art or whatever it is that tickles your fancy? This excludes excuses because we can all make them, but is there anything that is actually preventing you from doing it? If so, are there any solutions you found to get around that hindrance? You can answer that question on Facebook.com/TheLocalMusicRevolution, on Twitter at TLMRPodcast, on Tumblr at Tumblr.com/TheLocalMusicRevolution, on Instagram at TheLocalMusicRevolution, and also on the WordPress, TheLocalMusicRevolution.wordpress.com. As always, I really do love hearing your feedback. It's a very, very awesome thing to have feedback at such an alarming pace. So I really do like reading it. When I'm at my, 9-to-5 job, sometimes it picks me up and gets me through the day. So I really like hearing it. So if you have any suggestions, any comments or anything like that about the podcast, let me know. It's coming on the 1 year mark, so if there's going to be changes, hopefully we can do that before the 1 year mark and maybe try a new format, something like that, spice things up a bit. Let me know what you think. So I've been in a partnership with Stringjoy.com since summer of 2015. It's been a few months, over six, I know that much. And it's been a wonderful ride. They're a really good company. I really enjoy what they do, and I love pushing them, and I take it very seriously pushing them on this medium. So when I get onto social media and I see their posts, I try to actually be a part of the conversation if it's something like that, or I try to reblog something if I truly think that it would fit with the Local Music Revolution's theory and idea behind the podcast. But this is amazing. Stringjoy.com actually now has an artist signature set that they are pushing from Dylan Desmond from Bellwitch. It's a 6-string bass set, which is outrageously weird. 6 strings on a bass, man. Awesome for you, but wow. Like, I can't even manage 4, so that is awesome. If you haven't heard of stringjoy.com, here's what's going on with that website. They are a string company out of Nashville, Tennessee. They will customize strings to you so you sound better and feel better playing. You can talk to them and they can make the customized strings to make your sound come out from your head, through your hands, out of your amp, and make you sound awesome. All you have to do is answer a few questions, work with the company, and they will find what works best for you. Stringjoy.com also has instrument cables that you can actually customize by the inch, as well as the connector, which that 90 degree connector, come on, everybody needs one of those. Those things are fantastic to work with. So if you're looking to test out some new strings, go to stringjoy.com and check out what they have to offer for you. You will not be disappointed. Once you get all of the equipment that you want and you're at checkout, enter the promo code LOCAL, that's L-O-C-A-L, and you will get a discount for being a listener of the Local Music Revolution. Speaking of this podcast, now that I've gotten this far into the intro, April 9th, 2016 will be the year anniversary show that I am putting on here in my hometown. It will be awesome. All of the bands on the bill are actually alumni of the show. You've heard them before. I made sure that it was the bands that I worked with because if I'm going to celebrate an anniversary, I would love to have the people that have been a part of it, the entire foundation from the get-go, to come out and be supported. That's what it's all about. So I've got some great, great bands coming up, and we got drink specials, we got video game streaming. You know those guys I talk about, failed gamers? Those guys are going to be there as well, doing their thing because they're awesome and they've been so amazing to me. It's just going to be a great time. That's April 9th, 2016, in Tulare, California, at a bar called Barmageddon. It's going to be a really fun night, so if you are in the Central Valley, you can get tickets from the bands. There's only 150 pre-sale tickets, and we want to see you there. So get in contact with one of the bands, and we will go from there. All right, I'm done with all the promo and the intro. Without any further ado, this is Raymond from Chasing Absalom. Check out what he's got to say. All right, man, we're live. I'm here with Ryan from Chasing Absalom. How are you doing, man?
I'm doing awesome. Thank you very much for having me today, man. I really appreciate that.
Oh, man, thank you for being on the show. So you are from Chasing Absalom. Is it a solo project or is it actually a band project?
It's a solo project, which, I mean, it started out as a solo project many, many years ago and developed into a band. I was working with a buddy of mine, their brothers, Payne Wheat and Lincoln Wheat, and it kind of was a trio for a little while. We ended up adding a bassist, and at that point we were thinking we were ready to do some house shows, but eventually everything ended up boiling back down to a solo project. So now it's just me and my guitar, basically.
Oh, wow. So you were telling me before we started you're an acoustic performer. What made you go from acoustic to, what made you go from the band to the acoustic?
I love a live sound. I really do. And the amps cranked up to 11 and the drummer kicking in your chest. And it's all very awesome, but it came down to a point where I can't recreate that sound by myself necessarily. Eventually, I just became friends with that acoustic guitar that was sitting in the corner of my room, and I realized that that's really all I needed for those complete songs. So eventually, you know, me and that acoustic just became really close friends, and that's the kind of music I started listening to, and I just stepped, you know, I still love that live music. Nirvana is one of my favorite bands of all time, so that loud rock sound will always have a place in my heart, but right now I gotta say acoustic is definitely fun for me. I'm really passionate about it.
So real quick, are you excited about that documentary Something to Heck, about
Montage of Heck, I think?
Yeah Are you
absolutely
you really you are
I want to see the perspective that they took, because to my understanding, they're not trying to patronize him. They're painting a very fair picture, I think, a very clean-cut picture all across is what I read. So I'm interested to see that perspective, because I feel like everybody so far has sort of almost victimized him, or, you know, maybe played it up as more of his character and a little bit less of who Kurt Cobain was.
Wow, that's a decent perspective on the subject. And did you hear about that gentleman trying to actually get the pictures released from his apartment when they found him?
Yeah, I did. I did see that. I don't know quite how I feel about that.
There's something in human nature that we have to see the gory stuff.
Right.
People don't want to admit it, but you kind of want to see, like, what's going on there. The thing is, the scene photos that they already released, that's good enough for me. I don't want to have to deal with that. Like, I'm okay. I'm really okay with that.
Yeah, you know, we've all been on Rotten.com at one point in time, for
yeah.
sure.
Yeah, exactly. All right, man, so let's get back to your music, all right?
Okay.
So you started with the band, and then now you're solo. So how do you work that? Is it strictly acoustic, or do you have some kind of background mechanics behind there, or is it just you?
Basically, my setup right now is GarageBand-based. I love my instruments. I have a half stack. I have all the means of recording live sound and all that good stuff. I will occasionally put a drum track behind it, but I try to keep everything as raw as possible. I want to keep my music stripped down to what you're going to hear if I play an open mic, or if I was in your buddy's living room and everybody was having drinks and we were passing the acoustic around. I feel like that's the first music I want to release and the first stuff I want to put out, because that's an honest, I believe it's being honest with everybody as to what they can expect from me. And I think if everyone can kind of embrace that, then I'm off to a great start. And then, you know, later on down the road, a fully produced album would be amazing. And that's awesome. And it's going to sound probably a lot better than live would, as it normally does. But for right now, I'm kind of throwing together these tracks that are literally me, my guitar, and a microphone as stripped down as possible, just to try and be as honest and realistic, because you have, like, The Voice and American Idol, and I'm not going to go with Dave Grohl on you, but I do really agree with a lot of his points. Talking about how mainstream music these days has made it extremely tough, and, I mean, it almost deters people from trying because of how tough it is to get out there and write some music.
Yeah. I really enjoy Dave Grohl. I've told many people he's the most metal guy I've never met.
Absolutely.
But the thing is, there was an interview with him, and he basically said, you have to go out into a garage, you have to get sweaty, you have to suck to be able to be a good musician. And there's not a lot of people that are saying that. I mean, yeah, the thing is, you have to practice. Everybody knows Absolutely. You have to practice to be good, but nobody actually tells you that you're going to suck in the beginning. And,
right.
like, he had the balls to tell you that, and I was like, thank you so much. Because I was in the garage sweating and just being a terrible drummer for years. And then finally I was able to go, I actually enjoy the fact I'm a good drummer now. So
there you go.
Yeah, Dave Grohl is fantastic. More people should be looking up to that guy.
Absolutely. There's not many things I disagree with Dave Grohl on, and that just all the more, the fact that he came from Nirvana. I mean, Kurt was a genius in himself, and then Dave coming out and just emerging from that, that was beautiful, too.
So, did you actually, have you heard the new Foo Fighters record?
I think I have heard the most recent one. That's the one that they did the HBO special around, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I bought that, and I was like, this is great, and then I got the HBO special, and I watched that, and I was like, oh my god, this is the most amazing thing I've ever seen. Like,
exactly.
I can't believe he documented every episode was a song. Like, nobody's ever done that before. And I was so enamored with that. I've watched it, I think, two or three times so far. I think I'm due for another time to go around and check that out.
Definitely. I mean, you can't get enough of it. I think more bands should be doing that.
They should.
Documenting the process.
Jeez, man. And I'm sorry. Getting off topic again. All right, man. So that's your ideology of the way you play music is actually pretty interesting. You want to be raw. You want to be able to show people what you can do. And you said you had drum tracks. By chance, are they drum set or are they kind of like hand drums, or how does that work?
To be completely honest with you, at this point in time, it's musical typing or a MIDI keyboard if I have one available to me. But it's basically either loops that happen to be on GarageBand that I've switched around a little bit, or I'll sit there, put it on a drum track, and type it out myself. All very simple stuff because, I mean, when it comes to acoustic, you don't do anything too crazy on the drums anyway.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's how I've been handling it so far.
Awesome, man. Awesome. All right, so I really like the way that you have that idea. Where did you get the idea of just being just raw as you can be, just like if you were playing at a party? Because not a lot of people wanted to do that. They want to have that, you know, straight on the grid, overproduced sound, and you want it to be raw. So where'd that come from?
I mean, Nirvana is where music started for me. It was essentially, I mean, my first three albums that I was given, not that I even picked up. Nirvana was the first music that I picked up, but my first three albums that I was given was a Gorillaz album, a Green Day album, and I believe an Eminem album from a friend of mine. And those were all really awesome, and I love Green Day. It was the Bullet in the Bible album. But when I heard Nirvana, that I picked up on my own. And I started listening to the lyrics and hearing it. And I started listening to a few interviews with Kurt. And one thing that he said, I mean, the worst crime of all is to fake it. I believe that's a quote. I hope I'm not misquoting him. But that stuck with me so hard when I was a kid. Just don't fake it. I mean, so that's exactly what I want to bring to my music, because I feel like if I have an album that sounds like it was produced by Timberland, and I go and get on that stage and I go to start singing into the microphone and I do my best out there, either I'm gonna have to have thousands of dollars of equipment behind me to make me sound like a pop star, which is a little ridiculous to me and far from what I want, or I'm going to put an album out there that I can actually play live. So it's realistic and it's fair. It's realistic for me and my skills as a musician. I've really only been playing guitar for a few years, to be honest with you. And I never thought of myself as a lead singer or a front man. I was always backup vocals at best. So I'm a fair musician right now. I'm not great. I don't think I'll be the next Hendrix, but I have something that a lot of people lack, I think, and that's passion. So I want to bring that passion, the microphone, my guitar, and me, and if people take to that, then that's awesome. And I want to do that because if I do it and I don't sound perfect, I feel like there's going to be a kid out there who sees me playing it up there full-heartedly, maybe not sounding the greatest, and they're going to go home and do the same thing. They're going to pick their guitar up, and eventually the music scene's going to be a lot less hard to walk into. It'll be a lot easier for everybody to come out and get together and get those ideas out.
Yeah, man. That's awesome. I really like that, the fact that you want to inspire somebody by actually having flaws. It's a very interesting way of dealing with music, especially now with the electronics and everything like that, how you can just, you know, line everything up on the grid and make it sound like it's perfect, and then go and make it sound like it's not perfect. It doesn't make sense to me, really. Like I was telling you before we started, I started out as a drummer. A few years ago, I built a home studio. I recorded a couple albums. I'm in the process of recording another one. And the thing that I hate doing is trying to make it sound on time. I'll play to a click track and everything, but if a snare's not exactly on the beat, I'm not going to go and spend time fixing that. It's just the way this song is. For the most part, everything's on beat and everything like that. But I mean, there's a couple times where you just, you know, you're human, you make mistakes. And I think that gives character to music rather than, you know, we need to sterilize that and put it out.
And absolutely.
It's really, like, really cool that you're doing that. Speaking of that, when you sit down and write, how does that process work for you?
For me, I always start with guitar. I know a lot of writers who will write down lyrics and then get inspired by those lyrics and then do the chord progression. But I'm a completely self-taught musician. I don't read notes. I don't write notes. I read tablature. Basically, I picked up a guitar and started teaching myself. I had a buddy who also did the same thing, but was a little bit more advanced. So I would ask him the basic questions, and he would point me on track. But my writing style, most of my songs, and I mean, we'll hear them later, I'm assuming, they're pretty much three or four chord progressions that flow, and then I'll start kind of humming a melody to it. From that melody, I will see where it takes me mentally, and then that's where my lyrics will come from. I mean, it sounds really simple because it is. But I think that is the perfect formula for a catchy song or a song that's easy to remember, is keeping it as simple as nursery rhymes, really. Because, keep it simple, keep it catchy, keep it to the point, and keep it passionate. And then you've got yourself... I mean, I think my songs are pretty catchy.
Well, that's awesome, man. It's very easy to get into a place where you just want to start adding things to music. You just want to add every single thing you can. And sometimes it just kind of deludes the fact that that song was really awesome to begin with. And... It's really about the mindset that you go into when you're writing. Being that you are just your voice and your acoustic, I mean, there's not really a lot of difficulty that you can put in there. But the thing is, I mean, you're sitting there and you want to be raw, so eliminating all the other aspects, you're just focusing on everything that makes you awesome. And that's really, really good to hear.
Thank you. I really appreciate that.
Well, you're very welcome, man. So, can you tell me about the song Lace?
Lace is going to be kind of my cheesy approach at that typical love song. Essentially, Lace is... there's a line in the song that says... without you, I'm just a lace without its shoe. That literally is the cheesiest way of what that song's about. It's a love song. I'm a ghost without my boo. It's really just a cheesy, fun little short song, a cute little song. just something kind of fun to kind of chuckle at. You know, it's a guilty pleasure of mine. I'm a little bit of a hopeless romantic. This isn't one of the songs you would whip out when you're sitting at the table with your boys, but, you know, if there's a couple girls in the audience, I could bet it'll make them squeal a little bit.
All right, this is Lace.
All my dreams seem to be nothing more than fantasy. All I am without you is a lace without a shoe. just a lock without a key. Without you, I am just me. And you're always on my mind, my mind. You're running through my mind tonight. All my fears seem so real when I know that you are near. Without you, I'm just a ghost. Just a ghost without its boom. You're running through my mind tonight. You're always on my mind, yeah. All my dreams seem to be nothing more than fantasy. Without you, I'm just a lace without its shoe.
All right, that was Lace. All right, Ryan, so we talked about your writing and how you put your songs together and everything, but I would also like to know how you record. Do you do it at home? Did you go to a studio? How does that work for you?
I do record at home right now, and I use an M-Audio interface, the cheap one, the $100 one. I picked up a semi-decent MacBook, and everything's basically through GarageBand. My recording setup is really, really simple. I have basically a $100 microphone, straight into the interface, straight through GarageBand. I do one track. I don't record the guitar and vocals separately. I just have it running straight into pretty much an open microphone. I do have a closet that I have kind of blocked off, isolated, so that there's not a fan blowing, obviously, and it doesn't sound too terrible. But typically, I mean, I am that guy that ends up screwing up and taking 40 takes, but I'll just turn the mic on and I'll go ahead and record myself warming up as well. I'm somebody who doesn't think you can record too much. I don't mind having a couple of tracks that are, you know, 10 minutes long of just me playing around. Maybe I can go back and hear something I like for inspiration later. But I'll start focusing and playing the song over and over till I get it semi-right, you know, until something I can feel pretty comfortable with. And I have a rule is once I hit that point, I only listen to it one more time. I won't let myself listen to it more than that, because then I know that's when the point comes in that I'm going to be like, oh, well, you know, that's when I'll start nitpicking it. So I have a point of confidence, and then I'll let myself listen to it one more time, and after that, I'll post it and walk away, and then I'll just wait for people to give me some replies.
So are the recordings raw too, or do you actually process them and put EQ and compression and stuff like that on it?
No, the recordings that I've so far released are just totally raw. They're going to be separate from the album that I intend on working on. The album is going to be more polished, most definitely. They will be equalized, and I will probably actually be looking for a producer to help me work with that one.
Wow. So why would you want a producer to come in and work with you?
Just for the little things. I mean, obviously, it wouldn't be... I want to stay true to the raw, but I know that there's certain little things. There's staying true to a raw sound, and then there's just being kind of sloppy, borderline negligent. The tracks that I'm recording now that are going to be raw, that I will allow a certain amount of mistakes for and all that reality, I'm going to put them all out. They're all for download on my SoundCloud right now for free, all of my original.
Nice.
Anybody who wants to listen to my music can, and it's free, and I don't think that I should charge them for it. The album, however, I do plan on putting on iTunes, and if I'm going to profit from it, I want to keep raw, I want to keep real, something I can reproduce, but I would like to have a producer come in and have a nice mastered track that's not going to sound half-assed in your car speakers, you know?
Yeah, I got you, man. All right, so how do you prep for your recording? You said that you just press record and everything, but is there a mindset that you have to get into before you start recording?
Absolutely. I feel like if you've had a rough day at work, or if you're mad at something, to do something, because I mean, you know as well as I do that recording can be so tedious sometimes.
Oh gosh.
And that can make it twice as long to record an album if you don't approach recording with the right mindset. So a lot of times, I mean, it's weird because I'm not the most morning person in the whole wide world, but for me, recording a lot of times is at 6 a.m. when I wake up and I can't go back to sleep. When the house is nice and quiet, I'll come into my my little booth that I have set up and just start recording, and that's when I get my best stuff. Is I won't give myself a chance to be part of the day yet. I'll just wake up and immediately hide into my cubby and just get into that mindset where I'm 100% music.
Wow, man. I generally start recording when my wife is at work, and when during the early morning hours, like 3 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, okay, awesome.
Yeah, I have my second bedroom in my apartment is my studio, so I have everything here, and I have electric drum sets because I live in an apartment, so I can do whatever I need to get that song done. So it's really cool. Like, yeah.
Oh yeah, electric drum sets gotta be awesome.
It is, but if you've ever played real drums, it's nothing like that. And it took me, I think, 2.5 years to get used to it. And
oh, no doubt.
Yeah. So I was playing at a level on the acoustic drums that I was like, yes, this is amazing. And then I get on the electric drums and I try doing that, and it's like, nope. No, not even. You wish. But back to your recording. You said that you do one mic, and that's really, really cool. I mean, I've never actually recorded the acoustic with less than two mics. But I was wondering, like, did it take you time to try to figure out the placement of the mic to get the guitar even with the vocals, or how did that work?
The way that I position my microphone, because there are places that I can put the microphone that the guitar will sound better and the vocals sound great, but I try to be fair positioning the microphone where it would be if I was just going to pick up, you know, if I was doing an open mic. So that's where the microphone is, because that's realistically where it's going to be if I was going to go do an open mic at some bar somewhere. So I just try to keep it somewhere in between the guitar and my voice to where both levels are strong enough and I feel like you can hear enough of both. And that's where I keep myself with. So basically my microphone is exactly where it would be if I was on stage.
So also on that vein, you said that you're going to be recording an album and you want to bring in a producer to polish it up a little. Is there anything else that you would you want to change with that album as to your process now?
Yeah, I want to go at it with a little bit more. Right now, I feel like I'm approaching my recording a little bit green. Because really I am 100% self-taught. I'm going at this because one day I thought that I could. Why couldn't I, right? I'm literally just that guy that's doing it. That's the best thing, and almost most of my motivation here is if I can do it, there's going to be 10 people behind me who are just regular guys that are going to come right behind me and do the same thing. It's going to start a movement or a revolution, if you will. I know it will, just from me and 10 other people who hear my story. So that's almost more motivation for me. It really is a music revolution that I'm trying to be a part of here. And that being said, I cannot stay the rebel outsider, I think. I don't think that I'll fit in all the way through. I don't think that I'll get enough respect long term if I don't learn to work more with the metronome, if I don't learn to record as bricked as much. You know, there's a lot of things I'm sure that a producer can teach me about structure when it comes to recording an album that I'm probably lacking now, because I have not been too strict with myself. It's been very slam the record button when you're ready to record, record something and spit it out. It's been very real and fast what I've been doing so far. Most of what I have recorded, actually, I believe I have 7 songs on my SoundCloud. 5 of them are covers. So I started out just putting up covers, and people were like, this is good. Like, you're decent. You should write music. Like, oh, well, I've kind of been playing around with these songs, so then I started putting up a few songs that way.
Well, you mentioned playing with the metronome, and I started in school band. Well, actually, I started beating on pots and pans when I was a kid, but I got into school band, and I learned how to read music and manuscript and play right and play on time, and I have a hatred for the cowbell because of my damn music teacher. But after I got out of that, I realized I didn't like marching band. I liked metal, and I wanted to play the drum set, and I really enjoyed the drum set. So I went on, and I completely abandoned that for years. I was just like, this is ridiculous. I'm playing from the heart. I feel what I'm playing. I'm going to write music right that I feel. And a year and a half ago, I put out my second album, and I was like, it's good, it's better than the first one, but I want it to be better. I want everything to be better. The only way I can get everything to be better is to be able to play the metronome. So I took a couple months, and the electronic drum set has where you can play along to tracks and hear a metronome. So I kind of did this thing where I was playing along to the tracks to begin with. I put on the metronome, and then I slowly made it to where it was only the metronome playing. And I learned how to play to the metronome again. It takes practice. I mean, being on beat and anticipating when it's going to say one is extremely difficult sometimes. So,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, especially if your adrenaline is rushing and you're on stage. You can hear a metronome and go, that's not the beat of the song. That's ridiculous. It's too slow. And it really is the beat of the song. So, I understand that. It's intimidating. It sucks sometimes. That metronome, keeping you, like, tangible is kind of a little bit of a drag sometimes. But it is very professional. It is what will take you to the next level, man. I highly suggest that.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was talking about when I was talking about the album. Is I do want to come at it with that true attempt at professionalism and put out a real album for everybody, you know?
Yeah, I got you, man. I completely understand. And like with every generic answer to anybody's question, it just takes practice, you know? And that's
absolutely
a sad fact. It takes time and effort to learn these things. sorry. So that's the only thing you would change is just the professionalism. Is there anything about your playing or how you structure your songs that you want to change in this next attempt?
I released these first two originals, and they sound extremely similar. A lot of my style is that style. I would like to say, I think it would be really awesome if I could record these songs acoustic and raw by myself, and if I've gained enough momentum, maybe enough people will hear this and agree with me and contact me, that maybe that album will be with a full band. I'm not opposed to anything right now. The sky is the limit with that full album, as long as I'm staying true to the same ideas that I'm sticking with now, you know.
Yeah.
But I'm not opposed to working with other musicians. I actually would like to. So when that album's being written, I might have another guitarist that's working with me, or maybe I'll have a drummer, which would be great. So as far as what I would like to change, do I have anything specifically in mind? Nothing other than bringing professionalism to the table. But I'm open to just about anything, as long as it stays true, obviously, to the original song.
Nice, man. So if that band happened, would you actually, would you continue to front the band and play the acoustic, or would you change to electric?
I feel like if somebody were to come along, they would be part of that decision making, and whoever would come along, I mean, I obviously have a good spot in my heart for electric and acoustic. I would think that it would be awesome to maintain both in a balanced way, being that two people could do a nice electric live sound pretty easily and an acoustic set with ease. So I think it would be cool to keep both, in my opinion. But if a band were to come along, I have no problem going completely live and staying, you know, keeping acoustic for maybe those random one or two song fillers.
Nice. You talked about this in the beginning of the interview before we started recording, and I'd like you to go into it again because it's such a cool story. What does Chasing Absalom mean?
Okay, Chasing Absalom. What Absalom is? Absalom is the caterpillar from Alice in Wonderland. And a lot of people don't know that. And he's the guy with the answers in that movie. Essentially, Alice is chasing down Absalom, asking him asking him questions that she needs the answers to, because he's the all-knowing Absalom. And in life, that's what the whole point is, right? Everybody has their questions or question that they want answered. So to me, Chasing Absalom is the perfect wrap-up. It's a metaphor for life. Everybody is chasing Absalom in a way. So that name, I feel, is really an honest, gripping name. And my love for Alice in Wonderland, ever since I was a kid, I've loved Alice in Wonderland. I have a full Alice in Wonderland sleeve. So the fact that it can be relevant and still one of my favorite things in the whole world, that name just kind of stuck with me at one point.
So you have the love for Alice in Wonderland. Is it because it's trippy, or did it hit you in a way that just made you completely fall in love?
I mean, I loved it when I was a kid. So when I was a kid, I had no idea of the trippy aspect of it yet. That was in my teenage years that I learned to fall in love with it again. But no, Alice in Wonderland, I feel like, is a really fair, is a lot more fair than all of the other child movies that I watched as a child. I feel like Alice in Wonderland, her journey through Wonderland was extremely fair, with the amount of things that went wrong and twists and turns and questions that weren't answered, were answered with half-ass answers. And I liked that the movie wasn't easy. It wasn't a clear-cut Disney movie. Wonderland is what life felt like. And as I got older, Wonderland and this awesome city Vegas that I just kind of go on little adventures through, I guess it kind of, I made a connection between the two. So as I was getting pieced out, my sleeve pieced out for Wonderland, I was getting different parts of Wonderland that stood for something out in the real world, you know?
Wow. That's pretty cool, man. Wow. So, what made you decide to ink yourself with Alice in Wonderland? I know you explained that you were getting those from the real world, but was it a conscious decision from an early age to get Alice in Wonderland tattooed on you somewhere?
When it comes to tattoos, I always wanted a theme. I never wanted to be that guy with a million tattoos that didn't go together. So I knew I wanted a sleeve, but I could never really figure out the theme. And I started kind of looking around, and I saw the original Lewis Carroll book, and there was a black and white picture of the cards painting the white roses red in the Red Queen's garden. And when I saw that, I knew, okay, this would be an awesome centerpiece. And I dedicated one part of my arm, a nice part of my sleeve, to that scene. And I liked it so much, I thought, this whole arm can be Wonderland. It makes sense. And I just went with it. I have the Jabberwocky, the Bandersnatch. I have two different Cheshire Cats. And it all just kind of went together, I think, in a way that it just kind of made sense to me at the timing. Because, obviously, you know, when you turn 18, being that rebellious rocker, you want to get inked. So you're going to reply out of the gate and grab the first ink that you can anyway. I'm just glad that this happened to be one of those first ones for me.
Nice, man. Nice. All right, man. So back to your music.
All right.
So how do you prep to play shows? Like, have you played shows just you and your acoustic?
I have played a few small house parties.
Okay.
Just me and my acoustic. But the two other shows, I played one show with live instruments, and then the other show with the band, when we were still a band, was acoustic as well. So I'm pretty used to playing acoustically no matter what. Now, as the band, I would always be kind of intoxicated. There would always be some sort of pre-party. Because I am a little bit of a shy person. Nowadays, though, I've developed a sort of confidence and comfort because, you know, when you tell yourself you're going out there to be raw, obviously the bar drops a little bit. Now am I saying that I can go out there and sound like crap? No. And do I still get nervous? Yeah, I still get the shakes and I'm still nervous. But I really love it. And especially doing covers for me, because seeing somebody recognize the song and sing along with you and just be enjoying it, that just means the world. So you can go from nervous as hell to in the moment and loving it just with one look on one person's face.
Nice, man. So do you prepare your sets when you do play shows? Or when you're doing the solo thing, do you just go off the vibe of the crowd?
Basically, I'll talk to whoever's there. Do you guys know this song? Or if maybe I don't have that as an option, I'll start with an original. But then going, like, I play Creep by Radiohead. Everybody knows that song. And, you know, there's a few. I play a Taking Back Sunday song called Divine Intervention. And then I play a few Say Anything songs that are kind of fun, a little bit poppy. So just depending on how the mood is and how everybody's feeling, I'll just whip something out like that. I don't typically make a set list unless it's something I have a lot of time to prepare for. A lot of anything I'm playing, if I have a guitar in my hand, it's normally at a party or somebody's invited to get together or an open mic. So a lot of times I don't have like a set that I've actually been able to play so far. I'm hoping that changes soon though.
So I've never actually played an open mic. So can you explain like the difference between the open mic experience and like a house party experience or a show experience?
Sure. Yeah, an open mic a lot of times is word of mouth. A lot of times it's been from friends of mine at bars or anything who just have slots of time to be filled. Or there's bands who will play there religiously, but they get different bands to open for them every week. It's all word of mouth when it comes to open mics. Or there's things like First Friday. where you can show up with a guitar and wait for your turn and get up there, and they'll let you play a song or two. Versus house parties are more along the lines of, if I hear somebody's having a house party, sometimes I'll pitch the idea, hey, would you care if I came and just played a few songs if the vibe was feeling right? Or they'll be asking, you know what I mean, for bands. And a lot of it is just networking. I find the music scene out here in Vegas is like 80% word of mouth and 20% on flyers and media. But a lot of stuff that's going on is just jam sessions that are happening from people talking to people talking to people. So when it comes to open mics, I know there's a few things down on Fremont. There's, I believe, Legend Sports Bar has one down on Boulder Highway. And then First Friday normally has something going on. But the open mic experience is normally a little bit more structured than the house party experience, in the way that the house party experience is going to be kind of you picking up a guitar and kind of pushing your way in there. The open mic is a little bit easier, I think, if you know people.
Nice. Well, can you tell me about the song Why?
Yeah, absolutely. Why is a little bit more of a serious song for me. It's a song about adoring someone and loving them so much, but really not knowing why. When you ask yourself, why do I love this person so damn much? I don't know. That was ultimately, I was having that feeling, and I just couldn't spit it out. So I ended up coming up with this chord progression, and I had that chord progression for 2 months with no melody. I could not find words for this song, just the chord progression, and I would think of the same thing every single time, which was obviously, who doesn't write songs about their ex-girlfriends, right, basically? Not too much that in-depth, it's not specifically about her, but just that experience, just what I walked away from, and just kind of how I felt within myself is what was in this song. Now, I didn't make it quite as dark, though. I wrote it from a perspective that I would say it was during the relationship. So I didn't know why I was so infatuated with this person. It didn't feel quite right, but I was still like a puppy wagging his tail, more than happy to be there. So it still carries well, and I feel like it could still be under a happy love song. Somebody might actually sing this song to their girlfriend in a good way.
Awesome. This is Why.
staring down the setting sun. I'm sitting next to you. There's nothing else I'd rather do, and I don't know why. I don't know why.
That was why. So, Ryan, we're getting to the end of this, and usually with the people I interview, I ask a simple question at the end. Where do you see yourself going with the music? What do you have, what plans do you have in store for the future?
Ultimately, if I was going to bottom line it for you, my goal is to establish a decent CD, something to back up a set list, and then get out there and start networking harder and playing more shows, hopefully shows that are set in stone, shows with flyers. I haven't been able to do this so far, and I would really like to get back into that show scene where I'm at least playing out once a week. I want to be an active musician. That's ultimately my goal. As well as recording, I would love to be an active musician, and that is exactly where I want to take it. I have been actually, I've posted a few ads on Facebook pages and on Craigslist looking for other musicians to, maybe even if they don't want to join or start a band, just to collaborate with on a few different ideas. My genre so far has been very acoustic, mellow, almost indie, I think. But I play reggae songs and things like that as well, so I'm super open-minded when it comes to music. So I want to develop as much as possible as a musician on all sides and get out and hopefully propel with me a handful of other musicians who are just as passionate as I am into the music scene. Just getting the wheels moving, man, to be honest with you. That's definitely in my near future.
Nice, man. So, on that front, how can people get a hold of you and hear your songs?
You can get a hold of me on Facebook. I have Chasing Absalom, facebook.com/ChasingAbsalom. It has my phone number on there. My personal Facebook is open to everybody. My name is Ryan Ramirez. I have a Reverb Nation and a SoundCloud, both /chasing_Absalom. And for everybody, Absalom is spelled ABSOLEM. And that's chasing_Absalom. And basically any social media site that you go to, facebook.com/chasingAbsalom, SoundCloud, Reverb. I'm on all of the above. You can find me anywhere. And you can find me out at local shows, too.
Awesome, man. Well, thank you so much for your time and being part of the show. I appreciate it. I had a blast talking to you, man. Keep in contact with me. I really, really want to see where you're going, all right?
Absolutely. Thank you very much for having me. What you're doing here, it absolutely is a revolution on all sides. It's great. And the same with you. I want to help out as much as possible, so I definitely want to stay in contact. I appreciate it,
brother. Thank you, brother. I will be talking to you very soon, man. You have a good day.
All right, you as well.
So, that was Raymond from Chasing Absalom. Quick question. It could be homework as well. Did anybody else know that the caterpillar from Alice in Wonderland was Absalom? Because that was really news to me. I had no clue what was going on. Really, though, it's some great trivia. I really enjoy that. And I got a lot of people that know Alice in Wonderland, and I didn't know that. So that's awesome. I also really like the acoustic approach that the Raymond's doing. I don't know what it is about it. I can't pinpoint it. It's just something about it that actually is I consider really, really good. if you want to hear more, he is on SoundCloud. You can go check him out under Chasing Absalom. And if you do by chance talk to Raymond, let him know that you heard about him through the local music revolution. And now, a word from our sponsor. I've always wanted to say that. It's probably unfounded completely, but hey, I thought it was funny. Let's go with it. Here is the Dirtbag Block of Rock featuring Saving Abel and hosted by local music revolution alumni Smitty.
Welcome to the Dirtbag Block of Rock on Cranked Up Live. I'm your host, Dirtbag Smitty, and we got a very special guest on the phone today. On the road, in the bus, touring down the freeway, going into the next show, which I think is El Paso, Mr. Eric Taylor, the bass player for the band Saving Abel. Eric, say hello to everyone.
Howdy.
These boys are from Mississippi, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, that is correct.
And you know what I love about you Southern guys, man, is you guys always love to display that, man. And you're proud of where you're from. And
we are.
I got respect for that.
Well, we might be a little biased, but it's God's country to us.
You guys did 306 shows last year. Let's talk about that, because that's insane, man. That's crazy.
It was ridiculous. It was 2014. We did 306 shows, which that includes days off. There's 59 days off we had.
Oh, man. You guys do good road dogs. Like,
yes.
What was your favorite part about that? And what was, like, what was the your least favorite part about that process, going on the road for that amount of time?
We did a bulk of those in a van and trailer.
Uh-huh.
Which was the blessing and the curse. Because it's when you go from touring and tour buses and stuff and have to go back to the van, like, we're not 18, 19-year-old kids anymore. Like, we're in our 30s and stuff. So it's like, oh, okay, it's a little different. But I got to see things I've never seen before, like, far as scenery and, like, how many times I've been through Washington and places and never actually got to look out the window and see everything. When you're surrounded by windows, you get to see that.
A lot of people don't think about for touring bands in a bus. You know, you guys, you play the show, you kind of wind down a little bit from the show, you know, you get ready to get in the bus and do your thing, or some go to an after party. Some bands do it themselves and they hump all their gear and stuff. And it just depends where the band is and on the situation. But when you're in a bus, you sleep at night while the driver drives and you don't see anything. I mean, it's dark out,
right?
But, like, you wake up and you're in the next spot.
Correct. That's how it is. So, yeah, but really, really enjoyed that aspect of going back to the van. But we're back in buses and stuff now, so we've been just fighting, man, just playing shows, doing what we love to do.
That's great,
we're
man.
Having fun with people, and that's the reason we're still able to do this, is our fans, man.
Yeah,
we try to take care of everyone that we meet, the reason why we do it. Hey, this is Eric from Saving Abel. Check out our single, 15 Minutes of Fame, on Dirtbag, Walk of Rock.
Could have told me the sky was falling, and I never questioned it at all, at all. When you get as full on anything as you are on yourself, you're reflection, and I don't know what it is you see, what you see. When you get as full on anything as you are on yourself.
music from Saving Nabel and other Dirtbag sponsored artists, visit dirtbag.com. Subscribe to us on YouTube at Dirtbag Clothing 1996. The Dirtbag Block of Rock is brought to you by Dirtbag Clothing on Cranked Up Live, sponsored by EMG Pickups.
And that was your weekly dose of the Block of Rock, hosted by Dirtbag Smitty from Dirtbag Clothing, one of our wonderful sponsors. So, how'd you enjoy it? This is the end of the episode. You don't have to be shy. You've listened this far. Just let me know what's going on. You can do that by going to facebook.com/thelocalmusicrevolution, Twitter at TLMR Podcast, Instagram at The Local Music Revolution, on Tumblr, tumblr.com/thelocalmusicrevolution, and finally on WordPress, thelocalmusicrevolution.wordpress.com. That is where this entire operation is run. Most of the important updates are released on that format before anywhere else, so you get all the information you need. On next week's episode, we're going to have a band here out of California again. They are called Skinwalker. This interview was recorded a couple months back, actually a few months back. Since then, they've actually been signed to a record label, so this is awesome to be able to have an interview before that and talk to them about how great they are. So, next week will be Skinwalker. All right, guys, thank you so much for being on this journey with me this week with Chasing Absalom and Saving Abel and Dirtbag Block of Rock. Until next time, this is the Local Music Revolution. I am Ogre. You are awesome. Thank you very much. Take care and be good, everyone.
This is the local music revolution.